This is Fresh Air. Next up on our Classic Films and Movie Icon series is an interview from our archive with Robert Duvall, recorded in 1996. Duvall made his mark starring in epic movies and intimate dramas. In the Godfather films, he played the Corleone family lawyer Tom Hagen. In Apocalypse Now, he played the macho Colonel Kilgore. In The Great Santini, he was a rigid Marine pilot who imposed a strict discipline on his family. In his Oscar-winning performance in Tender Mercies, he was a country music singer on the skids, living a quiet life with a widow and her son. He also starred in the Western miniseries Lonesome Dove. Here's Duvall in a famous scene from The Godfather. He's traveled to Hollywood to persuade a movie producer to give a starring role to Don Corleone's godson.
I was sent by a friend of Johnny Fontaine. His friend is my client. Would give his undying friendship to Mr. Walsh. If Mr. Walsh would grant us a small favor.
Walsh is listening.
Give Johnny the part in that new war film you're starting next week.
And, what favor would your friend grant, Mr. Walsh?
You're going to have some union problems. My client could make them disappear. Also, one of your top stars has just moved from marijuana to heroin.
Are you trying to muscle me?
Absolutely
now,
not.
Now, listen to me, you smooth-talking son of a bitch. Let me lay it on the line for you and your boss, whoever he is. Johnny Fontaine will never get that movie. I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, Wop, Greaseball, Goombas come out of the woodwork.
I'm German-Irish.
Well, let me tell you something, my Kraut Mick friend. I'm going to make so much trouble for you, you won't know what
to hit
you.
Mr. Walsh, come a lawyer. I have not threatened.
I know almost every big lawyer in New York. Who the hell are you?
I have a special practice. I handle one client. Now, you have my number. I'll wait for your call. By the way, I admire your pictures very much.
It's interesting. You know, the Godfather films are such, like, operatic movies with, you know, people playing gangsters who are given to grand displays of emotion and violence. And you're the one in the movie, the legal advisor, whose job is to advise, to be discreet, to tone everything down. So in a way, you're playing a very opposite type of personality than all the other personalities in the film.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty interesting character in that he was an adopted son plus this legal advisor. So therefore, as an actor and as the character, you really can't cross the line. It's you're kind of an outsider, but yet you're not an outsider. I really enjoyed the part. I mean, those first two Godfathers, that's about as good as you can get filmmaking wise, I think.
I agree.
Francis was at top form, although, as you say, maybe a touch they romanticized the organized crime to a point, but it was such good filmmaking. You can excuse that.
Do you have any favorite scenes in the Godfather films?
Well, there were a lot of my liked, you know. I mean, the one with Michael Gazzo in Godfather 2, where I have to tell him he has to, slit his wrists. I enjoyed that a lot, that scene. And the scene where I had to tell Brando that Sonny died in Godfather 1, that was nice. And the other scenes I liked a lot, too, but those kind of come to mind very quickly.
My wife is crying upstairs. I hear cars coming to the house. Consigliere Minor. I think you should tell your Don what everyone seems to know.
I didn't tell Mama anything. I was about to come up and wake you just now and tell you.
But you needed a drink first.
Yeah.
And now you've had your drink.
They shot Sonny on the causeway. He's dead.
Now, you worked with Francis Ford Coppola again on Apocalypse Now.
Right, right.
And in Apocalypse Now, you were Colonel Kilgore, famous for the line...
But I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Is that the one?
That's the one.
Smells like victory, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a wonderful line. People come up to me and quote it to me and say it like it's such an in thing between just me and them. And like it's like they're the only ones that ever thought of it. But that happens with everybody the same way.
Did you get the script and say, well, first of all, was that line in the script? Or is that something that you
improvised? Yeah, no, that was in there. And I think the part was offered to somebody else and they turned it down. And I said to Francis, I know that the part's written for a bigger guy, real tall, big guy. But, you know, I'll just say once, I think maybe I could do the part, and I'll put in my plea. And he gave it to me. So It was enjoyable. It was a lovely part, and I enjoyed playing it very much.
Why did you want to play it a lot? This is another part that I'm sure your father was thinking, hope nobody thinks this is based on me.
Right. No, he knows. He knows. He always kind of just shook his head, I think, most of the time. It's like my uncle in Montana was a rancher. I wish he had lived to see Lonesome Dove, because that's my favorite of all. Uh-huh. And when he saw The Godfather, he was hard of hearing, my uncle. And he said, I'd rather see a good Western. You know, he piped out in the theater, you know, middle of Montana there. But my dad, he was proud. You know, he never said a lot. My mother, too.
You smell that? Ah! Napalm, son. Nothing else in the world smells like that. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. The smell, you know, that gasoline smell. The whole hill. Smelled like victory.
So when you saw the line in the film, I love the smell of napalm in the morning, did you say to yourself, a classic line, people will be repeating this back to me?
No, I didn't. I didn't think of that. I didn't think of it that way. I wasn't sure, you know. I mean, sometimes you're not so aware of that, although you like lines like that.
Did you do a lot of different line readings on that?
The one that was most predominant, there was Jimmy Keen, a friend of mine who played a small part in that from Buffalo. I made him call me Mr. Duvall for a year because that was a relationship in the movie because, you know, but we're all on a first-name basis. But he's saying, now, how do you do this? And he was watching me, and he did great imitation. We were always doing imitation. So the final dress rehearsal before we filmed, we were always doing Brando imitation. So I said, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. I paused, and I said, smells like victory. I did my Brando, and he couldn't believe I would do that, you know. So then he began doing Brando imitation. So then when Brando wanted $100,000 to do six lines of the censored stuff for the censored version of the TV version of The Godfather, and they wouldn't pay him, they got Jimmy Keen from Buffalo for $200 to do Brando.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So those imitations started in the Philippines, and Jimmy got, because of those imitations, blossomed into the guy that would do the censored version for Brando.
Hey, they could have saved a lot of trouble with Brando and Apocalypse Now, I guess.
I suppose, yeah. Well, Jimmy was the guy that was there that told me all these wild stories after I left. See, I did the second half of my part first, and then 6 months later came back into the first half. It was strange the way I had to go do another job because they got so bogged down with weather and with different actors and approaches and so forth. It took a long time to complete that film.
It must have been really different working with Coppola on the Godfather movies than working with him on Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, well, you see, I had worked with Francis in The Rain People, as I had said.
And that was in the late 60s.
Kind of a moody guy, and I didn't quite get a handle on Francis. But then I gained a tremendous amount of respect for him because on Godfather 1, we started out, I said, okay, it's Francis again. He's not saying much. A little moody, you know, the way he is. He never comes up. I want to write a book someday called The Rushes Are Great because everybody protects everybody by saying The Rushes Are Great. Francis is one of the only guys that comes out of the cutting room with a long face, and maybe that's why he's so good in that he isn't always thrilled, you know. But I gained a lot of respect for him because in Godfather 1, physically, they had an understudy director following him around in case he failed to fire him and take over. And I think the first AD was the best friend of that would-be hopeful director. That's quite a lousy thing to do to a director. And I gained a lot of respect for Francis for working under that pressure.
When you were young, Brando was one of your heroes, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was quite a phenom. I mean, there were others too, but then you grow away from somebody's influence and find your own way.
So what was it like to work with him when he was much older? He'd physically changed. It wasn't, I think, a particularly good period for him.
Well, no, in The Godfather, he was very trim. Yeah.
Right. But
and when
Apocalypse,
I first worked with him, Apocalypse, yeah, I wasn't really there when he worked.
Right.
I worked with him first in The Chase way back, and you know, the first day he called me into his dressing room and we talked about the part. I said, to my wife, this is going to be great. We're going to be like brother. We had a great rapport. Then he never spoke to me again for 8 weeks. I wasn't quite used to that lifestyle of somebody not speaking to you at the beginning of a day, but that's the way he is, I guess. But no, I was respectful and admired him and enjoyed working with him. And as I say in Apocalypse Now, that he came into the jungle with his baby blue Mercedes driving down the jungle, you know, after I had left. And then when I came back, he'd finished, you know. So I didn't get to work with him during his heavy period. I guess, well, who was it? Picasso had his blue period, is this period, is that period. Brando had his thin period, now his heavy period.
So tell me, when you were young and getting started in acting, what were your expectations? What did you think would come of your career?
Well, maybe I was innocent, and maybe innocence not the same as naive. Maybe it is. I always felt that somehow I would fit in. I went to New York feeling I would be a stage actor. I didn't think a lot about movies. I thought about them, but I wasn't sure. I just figured I was going to work. I didn't know how, but I figured it would happen. And when I got one of the worst reviews anybody could ever get, I went back to Virginia for a while, and then I came back again. My friend Udo Grossbard, then we had done A View from the Bridge, and we did it again off-Broadway, and it was a wonderful production with John Voight. Dusty Hoffman was assistant stage manager, Susan Ansbach, Ray Bieri, Richie Castellano. It was a wonderful production, and that helped launch my into film and TV, you know.
So if you don't mind my asking, what did that terrible review say
I'm going to tell you exactly what it said.
You still remember.
It said, Shaw has invented some impossible young men in his plays, but never one so revolting as the romantic young interest in this one. And the character is made even less palatable by Robert Duvall, whose spine tends toward a figure S, whose diction is flannel-coated, and whose simpering expressions are moronic. Now, that's a pretty bad review.
Yeah.
And the other paper likened me to Liberace, so I had to get off the bus.
Liberace?
Yeah, I had to get off the bus. I was physically ill.
What was the connection to Liberace?
I don't know. Maybe I played him a little of feeder. I don't know what it was. It was a guy from the Actors Studio. I don't know. He had us lying down doing Sense Memory before we were doing George Bernard Shaw. I said, we should be telling jokes, not lying on the floor for Sense Memory. It was the whole approach was wrong. It was a disaster. But, at least it was an experience at least.
Well, Robert Duvall, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
My interview with Robert Duvall was recorded in 1996. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, we continue our classic films and movie icons series. We'll feature interviews from our archive with two actors who started as child stars, Jodie Foster and Molly Ringwald. Foster became famous for her 1976 films Freaky Friday and Taxi Driver. Recently, she starred in the latest season of True Detective and was nominated for an Oscar for her role in Naiad. Ringwald was in the sitcoms Different Strokes and The Facts of Life and became famous for her roles in the teen films 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, and Pretty in Pink. Most recently, she was in Feud, Capote vs. the Swans. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Salman, Teresa Madden, Monique Nazareth, Thea Challoner, Susan Yakundi, and Joel Wolfram. Special thanks to NPR Plus producer Nick Anderson. Our digital media producers are Molly C.V. Nesper and Sabrina Seward. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. Our co-host is Tanya Mosley. I'm Terry Gross.